This morning we're going to have a look at the contemplation of the elements. This is part of the contemplation of the body, which is the first of the four satipatthanas. This practice that we're doing, in English usually called insight meditation, is more accurately the practice of satipatthana, which is establishing mindfulness. And the discourse that that talks about it is the Satipatthana Sutta, the discourse on the establishments of mindfulness or the foundations of mindfulness, depending on how you translate it. And the first establishment or the first foundation is body. So using body as meditation object. And it's not an accident that the Buddha puts it first. It's foundational. The Buddha's approach to meditation is very physical. That's something that can be easy to overlook. Partly because we have a very different relationship to the body than he did in his culture. We're much more cut off from the body than he was. Partly because of our ideas about spiritual. Surely meditation is somehow spiritual. And in the European tradition, if you say spiritual, you're talking about something disconnected from the body, independent of the body. But another aspect, I think, which has muddied the waters is the practice comes to us through the monastic sangha in traditional Asian countries, male monastic sangha. And this is just my personal impression, is that generally most of them are pretty cut off from their own bodies. That they don't have much sense of their own body. I would see it in the tendency to be very overweight that you find among certainly Burmese teachers. I was trained mostly in Burma. And the general discomfort with anything around physicality, and of course anything around sexuality. And they too tend to emphasize, what they call mind. And they're much more, and the body becomes just this instrument that we flog in order to clarify the mind. But when I read the Buddha, I don't get the sense that that was his attitude at all. I get the sense that he was very much in his own body, lived in a culture where people generally were very comfortable with their body and very matter-of-fact about it, and his approach to meditation is very embodied. So we work with the body a lot in this practice. It's the first foundation of mindfulness. One aspect is the contemplation of the elements. And the elements, work of contemplating the elements has a lot to do with cutting through our concepts of the body. For the Buddha, we live in a world of concept rather than a world of actuality. We relate to our concepts of things rather than things. It's like we live wrapped up in cling wrap. We're separated from ourselves and the world through this layer of concept, and we tend not to make intimate contact with what's going on. So to cut through concept in our relationship to the body is very important, and in this practice that's part of what we try to do. So one way that Sayadaw Upandita would convey this aspect of the practice is he'd start with a basic question to the audience. For example, he might say, "What's this?" A hand. Bleeding obvious. "What's this?" fist. Again, bleeding obvious. Hand, fist. And they're both bleeding obvious, and I doubt that anybody here would seriously disagree. If there's a trained philosopher or a trained lawyer, I'm sure they would. But that's just because of the artificial training that they've gone through. Okay. Hand, fist. Bleeding obvious. So can you tell me when the hand becomes a fist? Just tell me the point where the hand ceases to be a hand and becomes a fist.
Yeah.
Now, good. So that's a fist. Whereas that isn't. Is it? That is obviously a hand. Whereas that is a fist. It doesn't work, does it? It's like we try to set the borders, and it's exactly when we try to set borders that the whole system starts to collapse, because it's actually quite arbitrary. Because it's not the reality, it's a concept about the reality, which is useful, but it's not the actual reality. So let's have a look at the reality. What I'd like you to do is to get into your meditation posture. And if you're a right-handed, work with your right hand. If you're left-handed, with the left hand. Just have your hand resting with the palm up. Close your eyes and put all of your awareness into your hand. And really feel your hand. And just feel it. Don't think about it. Don't visualize it. Just feel it. And then start to curl the fingers, feeling the experience, and asking yourself, what is it that I'm experiencing? Curling the fingers. And really focusing on the experience, eyes closed, just directly feeling it. Keep going. If you're making contact with the palm, just keep squeezing. And just feeling the experience. What did you experience?
Pressure.
Warmth.
Earth.
Earth. What was earth?
The matter.
But how did you experience it?
The hardness.
Hardness. Yeah. Pressure,
space,
warmth.
Space. And temperature.
Temperature.
Change.
And the changes in all these?
And the restriction of the blood inside the piece to the clone.
How do you know it was blood?
The fingers seemed to become more restrictive, and as the blood flow stopped.
So a sense of restriction?
Mm.
How did you know they were fingers?
Okay.
How did you know they were fingers?
And those fingers.
You weren't looking at them? You weren't looking at them.
Oh, no.
What told you these are fingers? What told you that these are fingers?
No one told me.
Yeah, so how?
I related to a hand and its fingers.
Mm. So you related to a concept?
Mm.
Mm. Very easy to do. It's our default position.
Yeah.
It's our default position.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you found constriction.
So I sat down with a handful of fingers.
Yeah. So you assume they were still there.
Yeah, I didn't look at them.
So the point of the exercise is that we start with hand and fist. But when we start to actually examine the experience, hand and fist disappear. What we have is movement, pressure, temperature, constriction, change, and so on and so forth. And these are the elements. The elements are elements in the sense that they are what survive a degree of presence. If I'm not paying attention, I simply assume hand, fingers, and it's an assumption, it's a concept. When I start to really closely pay attention, hand and fingers disappear, but there is something there. There's definitely something there which is being experienced. And the closer I look, the clearer it becomes, and what is experienced is a whole series of changing sensations. And these changing sensations survive my examination of them. So this makes them elements. For the Buddha, what is real is what survives our presence, our being present to it. Sometimes if I'm present to something, if I'm aware of something, it'll disappear like that. So, for example, I might be caught up in a thought, which at the moment is quite real. Then I realise I'm thinking, hey, it's gone. It doesn't survive. It's not real. I might have a persistent thought, and the thought disappears. But what's underneath it, we might call emotion, that sticks around. That's more real than the thought. But I keep looking at the emotion and that disappears. It turns out that's not so real either. So the more we examine experience, things start to disappear. What survives at the bottom are the elements. So in the here we're talking about the elements of the physical body, which the Buddha talks about in as four, what he calls the forgotten what he calls them. Are they the Mahadhatu? You sure? My mind is not clear these days. Which are the four great appearances. Mahabhuta, that's the word I was groping for. Yes, the Mahabhuta. The four great appearances, and these are the Dhatus, the elements of earth, air, fire, and water. And these are elements, elemental aspects of experience. So earth element is the experience of resistance from hard to soft. Air element is the experience of movement in all of its forms. So pressure, vibration, expansion, contraction, lifting, collapsing, and so on and so forth. Fire element is the experience of temperature from cold to hot, and water element is the experience of liquidity and cohesion. So liquidity is wetness, dryness, and cohesion is stickiness, slipperiness. Now, these elements are, of course, another set of concepts. So they're not to be taken too seriously. But they're concepts that are closer to what's actually going on than me, my body, and so on. So what we're going to do here is do a quick tour of the four elements. And doing the same thing as we did with the hand exercise, look at the experience, focus in on it, and just ask yourself, what is it? What do I actually experience? Not what I think it to be, but what do I actually experience? Any questions before we start?
Does space come into it?
Space is another one. It's another one of the Dhatus. It's not one of the four Mahabhuta. Uh-huh. Not one of the four great appearances, but it is another element.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting one. It's closely associated with air and earth, because if you have movement, you have movement through space, and space ends when there's a resistance. But you can tune into the quality of space itself. We were talking about it in the group yesterday. If you use sound as a meditation object, one of the things that makes it interesting is that it has space element within it, because you get this sense of some sounds are close, some sounds are further away, some sounds are still further away. So you can get in touch with space through sound. So one exercise, if you want to get in touch with space, would be start to listen and see if you can identify the sound which is furthest away. So it's like you go out and to see until you find the limit of sound. And in doing that, you get a sense of space.
It's exploring. Yeah.
Okay, are we ready? So if you get into the meditation posture and begin by being aware of the whole posture, constructing the posture from the ground up, experiencing the whole body, just opening up to the experience of the whole body as it sits there. And then turn your attention to those parts of the body where you feel hardness. Where do you feel hardness in the body? You might begin by going to the base of the body, but don't be limited there. Look for hardness. And if you find it, focus in on it and name it hard, hard. And now, turn your awareness to those parts of the body where you feel softness. Where do you find softness in the body? Look for it. Focus in on it and name it. Soft. Soft. Now open up again to the whole body, expanding awareness to the whole body. And from there, turn your awareness to all those parts of the body where you feel heat or warmth. Can you find heat, warmth? If you can, focus in on it and name it, hot or warm. And now focus in on those parts of the body where you feel cold or coolness. Can you find cold or coolness? If you can, focus in on it and name it, cold or cool. Now open up again to the whole body, experiencing the whole body. And from there, turn your awareness to those parts of the body where you feel wetness. Where do you find wetness? Look for it, and if you can find it, focus in on it and name it. Wet. Wet. And now focus in on those parts of the body where you find dryness. Can you find dryness? Look for it, and if you can find it, name it. Dry. Dry. Now open up again to the whole body, experiencing the whole body. And from there, focus in on those parts of the body where you feel movement. Where can you find movement? Look for it, and if you can find it, focus in on it and name it. Movement. Movement. And now, focus in on those parts of the body where you feel lift or support. Lift, movement upwards, or support. Look for it, and if you can find it, name it. Lift, support. Now open up to the whole body again, experiencing the whole body, and open up to all of the elements as they flow. Don't look for any specific thing. Just be aware of the elements as they move now. Don't try to stay on any one aspect, but open up to the experience of the whole body and the flow of the elements. Okay. Which was the most obvious one?
Hardness.
Hardness.
Yeah.
What about softness? Did you find softness as well?
Yeah.
Very subtle, though, isn't it?
Softness. So hardness is most obvious because it's more gross.
Mm.
Anyone else? What did you find it easiest to hook onto, to find?
Wet.
Oh, yeah. That was easy. That was the strongest. What about dryness? Did you find dryness?
When looking for wet, then dry becomes apparent.
So they always go together?
No.
I usually find them side by side. In fact, sometimes when I look for one, I find the other. So the mind can play tricks, but also it shows that they're not radically separate. It's like variations on a theme. What was the most obscure one? What was the most difficult one?
Lift.
You know what? Lift as well. I always throw that in as a extra. Because I find it's quite important. You notice we talk about that in the exercises in the morning, grip, lift and balance. It's really useful to get in touch with. It's movement, but it's movement upwards. And if you can find it, posture becomes a lot easier. It ceases to be a struggle to stay up. You just tune into it and there you are. So it's a really good one to become sensitive to. Sometimes you get the opposite. Movement down.
Gravity.
We don't use these tacky scientific terms here. And of course, air element is essentially movement, and sometimes it's going up and sometimes it's going down. What about movement as such? How was that?
I have lots of movement in my body. All over the place.
Would this be external movement as the body moves around, or internal movement?
All No, internal. Internal.
Internal.
And external.
Yeah.
Vibration.
Yeah.
Heartbeat.
Yeah.
Money turns around a lot.
And of course, if I make the distinction between internal and external movement, I'm not putting a value on either one of them. Both are movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you move within a meditation sitting, that's just movement, and it's a very good meditation object. And it's just as valid as internal movement, for example, in the breathing.
Right.
It's just movement, that's all.
I'll just keep fighting.
Yeah.
Keep moving.
Anyone pick up on the connection between movement and breathing? Breathing is an interesting one. I mean, how do you know that you're breathing? You can conceptualize it, you can infer it because you're alive. Therefore, you must be breathing. But how do you actually know? What's the actual experience? And it's complex, but one of the basic aspects of it is, of course, movement. There's movement within the body, which is the breathing.
And hardness and softness.
One of the things about the four Mahabhuta is they come as a package.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got one, you've got all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But at any given time, one of them tends to be predominant.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of the reasons I think why the Buddha presents them together, is that they are a package.
This mentioned a experience I had with Vivekananda.
Mm-hmm.
A few weeks under his tuition. He asked me during an interview to look at his pencil and divide the pencil into three,
mm-hmm.
and imagine that's your in-breath. He wants to know what was going on in the first third of your in-breath.
Mm.
And what's going on in the first third of your in-breath is what we're really talking about.
Hmm. What about the second third and the third third?
Hmm.
Yeah. So that's his way of getting at the elements, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things...
I'm warning you about that one.
Oh, good. I'll just ignore it.
He doesn't let you.
One of the... things about the working with the elements is it's all about precision. So being very precise about what exactly is there, what exactly is going on. And that's why the naming can be so useful for it. So if I'm focusing on or noticing hardness, it's different from softness. It can be right next door, and it can be rapidly replaced by softness. But in that moment, when it's hardness. It's not softness. It's quite distinct, quite precise. So the naming helps precision. So when you name it, and using a term as close as possible to the actual experience. So it's good not to use the elements as a name, not earth element or air element, but rather movement, pressure, vibration, expansion, contraction, hardness, softness, etc.
I've had that habit sometimes when you have in the past.
Sorry, what's the habit?
Use the elements.
Oh, yeah.
Really named with elements. It's hard to break that habit.
Yeah. Yep.
Keep putting fire on it.
Yeah. So it's not a disaster, but it's just
it's
not
just
as
a bit annoying for
it's,
me.
Yeah. It's not as close to the actual experience. So you want to part of the purpose of this is to cut through concept, drop beneath our concept of what is going on to what is actually going on. And we can't assume that we know. Our assumption is a concept. So we've got to drop the concept and actually look as if for the first time, as if we've never seen it before. So this naivete is a very important quality for the meditator. It's what is called beginner's mind. It's like having the attitude, I've never been here before, which is in fact true, given the reality of impermanence. But we think we have been here before, because we live in a world of concepts, and concepts are stable. They stick around for a long time. So my concept of me is much more stable than I am. I keep changing. But my concept of me is pretty much fixed. My concept of you is pretty much fixed. But you present differently every time I meet you. But I tend not to notice it, because what I'm relating to is my concept of you. So dropping beneath the concept, and the naming is what the tradition calls using a thorn to extract a thorn. It's using a concept to cut through concept. So the naming can be useful. If it gets in the way, just drop it. So if it becomes habitual, if you feel you're caught up in it, just don't use it. Just directly experience. So the basic lesson here is, first of all, stay with the body, with your experience of the body, and be precise. Be as precise as possible in your awareness of the body, and don't take anything for granted. Any questions or comments?
Easy to find a particular experiment like cold, dry, wet. I mean, if you're just looking for a specific one, it is easier to find. But when you say that at the end, try to just open up to the whole body to feel the dynamic of all the elements, I just got lost.
Oh, did you? What was that last one like for other people?
What last one?
The opening up to all of the elements.
I just felt the ones I always feel. The hardness, the movement, temperature.
Yeah.
Those are things that are quite active a lot of the time.
Were they all going gangbusters at once?
No. And it just, it's sort of where my attention anchors. And it sort of goes to my checkpoints where the attention rotates through.
Yep.
Mine was sort of more expansive.
Mm-hmm.
Just all going at once.
So you had that sense of everything happening at once.
Yeah.
Mm. Christine?
I just slipped back into habitual body scan. So internal and external.
Yeah.
I was sort of still in control, going up and down.
Mm. That's the opening up to the elements. I toss in at the end. Some people, it's like, so what? And other people really like it. That's suddenly there's this explosion of elemental whatever's happening. All of these things, they're just games. Don't take them seriously. And there's nothing that's supposed to happen. It's just different ways of looking. And what you find is that some ways of looking are useful for you. They seem to work. Other ways are not. So you just ignore the ones that aren't useful.
They are dominant elements. Some elements are pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Even if you don't find it,
yeah.
It is there.
Mm. Which one's the most dominant for you?
Coolness.
Mm. So the ones that you find dominant, they're the ones that you use the most when you meditate. The two ones that the meditation method emphasizes the most are air element and earth, movement and touch. They tend to be quite obvious. And so they're the ones that are most frequently emphasized in the meditation technique. So in the walking, the movement of the body, that's air element, the touch of the foot, earth. The others are in there as well. Breathing meditation, it's air element, movement. The others are in there as well. So generally most people find movement and touch to be the obvious ones, and so they're the ones we focus on. But whatever is obvious for you, that's what you go for, because what you want is to be able to hook onto the body and track it over a period of time. So you make it easy for yourself, not difficult for yourself. You go to what's obvious. If something isn't obvious, you just forget about it. Just go for what's obvious. The naming can be interesting in the sense of the games you can play with it. And this struck me years ago when I was in Mahasi and I was doing the elements. And I was doing the hot season. The predominant elements were heat and wetness. Wetness was the sweat. Sitting in a constant puddle. Self-created puddle. When people complain about the heat, I say, mate, you've never had hot season in Rangoon. to complain to me about it. At 3 a.m. when you get up in the morning, the concrete is still radiating heat. I was doing the elements and naming it. And then it suddenly occurred to me, why don't I reverse procedure? So I just sat there with a kind of open awareness, and then I used the word hot. And as soon as I used the word hot, every part of the body that was hot stood up at attention. And then I said, cool. And the heat all sat down, and all the cool was sat up at attention. And then I said, movement. And all the coolness sat down, and all the movement came up. It was amazing. It's like a trained dog.
Oh, concentrated.
But I realized how the naming does have an effect on the awareness. The naming is all about aim, sending the awareness there. And it really does work over a period of time. You can get very accurate with it. So one of the things that why we use the naming in this exercise is to introduce you to that, to the usefulness of the naming. The naming also has a shadow side. If you're too reliant on the name, you'll find that the awareness goes to the name, not to what you are naming. So it becomes a mantra, in other words. If you notice that, drop it. If that's happening, just drop the naming. Get rid of it. And stay with the actuality. Okay. Any other questions?
In relation to pain.
Yes, elements of pain, the elemental qualities of the sensation.
This. Yeah.
They're
all there. So
working with painful physical sensation, look at it as elements. But the other thing with pain is look at the mind.
I was just going to say, how do you cope with mind pain?
The mind in response to, even if it's physical pain, look at the relationship between mind and body.
Mm.
It's the response of the mind will deeply affect the sensations. Mm. If there's hardness and resistance in the mind, the sensations will be more powerful.
What about mental pain?
Same. You've got the pain itself, and then in the mind, and then you've got the mind's response to the pain, to the mental pain.
Mm.
You've got to, in other words, the
aversion.
The yeah. And you also, it's the same also that you find the elements, although the Buddha doesn't talk about this, but you find the elements in the mind as well.
Mm.
So, like the mind is sometimes hard, sometimes soft, sometimes hot, sometimes cold.
Yeah.
The Buddha says anger burns.
Mm-hmm.
He's right.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes though anger is very cold.
Mm-hmm.
It's so you can find the elements in the mind as well.
These are also through joy. Also joy. It's cool and warm.
Mm. Yeah. So that whole elemental approach to experience you can extend throughout. It's most obvious in the body, but you find it in the mind as well. Yeah.
I was just wondering if you could comment a little more on the relationship between the mind and the element, so to speak, because I noticed that as we sat towards the end, I was having some posture pain, and places that were previously soft were now becoming hard. And my interpretation was it was simply my mind's experience, because my mind was starting to tense up, my experience of the element itself was changing. I'm just wondering if you could comment on that.
This is part of the interrelationships between body and mind. In the medieval tradition, Theravada tradition, when they talk about the development of insight, they talk about it in terms of 16 jnanas, or understandings, or knowledges. And the first one is nama rupa paricheda jnana, which is the paricheda, the distinction between nama and rupa, between mind and body. So this is body, this is physical, that's mental. This is the sensation, that's the mind that knows the sensation. And they're not the same. And then the second jnana, the second understanding, is paccaya parigaha jnana, which is the conditional relationships between these two. That although mind is not body, and body is not mind, yet mind affects body, and body affects mind. There's a dance going on between them. So you're getting a sense of that dance. And it's the experience, if we're not paying attention, we just experience it as a whole package. Oh my God, it hurts. But if we're paying attention, here's the dance of sensations, here's the dance of the mind's response, and they're both interrelating. And what can I see of this dance, and how can I intervene within it? And one obvious way to intervene would be go to the mind and start to relax. And then see what that does to the sensation. Okay. Oh, yeah. So.
I don't know whether this is the appropriate time to ask it, but it's come up for me now. So, if we experience the elements within the mind associated with things like joy and happiness, then is that the nature of being embodied? And so, in other words, if we're striving for, say, equanimity, or the Buddha experiences equanimity, does that mean that when you are awake, if you like, those elemental experiences of, say, associated with an emotion like joy or sorrow happen because we're embodied, or do you understand what I'm trying to get at?
They if we've got a clear sense of body and mind and the relationships between them, what you find is things flow more naturally, more easily. So it's what I would call emotional fluidity. Like emotions flow much more naturally, and you don't get stuck. Before I started meditating in the early years, my emotional life was much more sticky. The having entered into a state, I would stay there for a fair period of time, and then on emerging, there'd still be an aftertaste. Like things would be affected by it. As I get older and go through the meditation practice, I find my emotions flow much more readily. So I enter into an emotion and slide out of it, and when it's gone, it's gone. And then there's something else. So there's much more of a flow of emotion. Plus, I'm much more aware of, in the emotion itself, of the physicality and the non-physicality of it, and the relationship between them, which actually helps with this whole flow aspect. So I notice, for example, that when emotion does stick around, that I'm holding it in the body, that the body is tensed in some way, and then this will feed the emotion, even though the situation is gone. But I notice that, and then the body relaxes, and then it really is gone. So it's like the whole process becomes more complex, more dynamic, and more transparent, and so it moves much more freely. It's all about movement. It's all about the wheel turning.
As opposed to being static, which was kind of where my head was going with it.
Concepts are static.
Yeah.
Concepts are very static. So being of a somewhat melancholic disposition, my response when anything bad would happen would be, yep, that's reality. That's what happens to me. Whereas if something good happened, I think, it won't last. So the concepts freeze the flow. So when you get out of the concepts, and then things can move a lot more readily.
Like pain and pleasure are the same thing.
They have certain similarities, but I always prefer pleasure over pain myself. But there's, yeah.
Pleasure's always waiting for it to stop.
Yeah. Part of the pleasure is pleasurable in its continuation, and pain is pleasurable in its end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they all are mixed up together.
Yeah.
And a lot of what we see as pleasure is actually the sense of relief from the cessation of pain.
Yeah.
They're all mixed up. Okay, that's enough for today.